I think it's making sure that you put the team in control of their own performance. And then it actually becomes not your responsibility, but you can then take the role of the mentor. How can I help you? Where can we improve? You know, how can I train you? How can I upskill you? So that your performance becomes much more in your control.
There's a difference between internal motivation and external motivation.
Who we're going to choose to be.
Be aware of what's happening.
Letting the client know that you care.
Without a good team, you're nothing.
It still does boil down to service.
When something's uncomfortable, that's what we need to look at most.
You're listening to Forest FM, the Salon Business Show with your host, Alex Burrell Springer. For your industry, by your industry.
Are you struggling to help your team stay accountable for their goals and targets? If so, you're not alone. Creating and maintaining a high-performance team is no easy feat. If you've attended Verna Wall and Rich Cullen's keynote presentation at the Salon Owners Summit 2024, or caught up on the blog recap, turns out it's what keeps many salon and spa owners up at night. This is not recent, though. Neil Dukoff, founder of Strategies, had observed this and was talking about it already in 2021, most likely long before then too. Is your team working toward the company's goals, or are they thinking about themselves only? Here's one of the segments that was edited out from the last rerun purely for episode duration purposes.
Here's our acid test for team. You go, here's the salon goal for service sales, and here's the salon goal for retail. Not individual goals. We're talking, what are your company's service sale goals, mm-hmm. and what are its retail goals? And is every single employee, is everyone going to work to achieve the company's goal for the month of January, and then we'll go to February, March, April, and so on and so forth? Or will everyone be my client, my sales, that's my customer, hey, I should have gotten the retail credit, blah, 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 you know? And there's that, that's where teamwork hits an inherent roadblock in salons. And it's because of that I, me, mine thing. Mm-hmm. And even if you have teamwork, whatever level you think you have, it's a whole different level of teamwork when everyone's pushing and pulling in the same direction for the company to hit its goal.
Traveling across the Atlantic Ocean all the way to London, Helen Ward has also been talking about it for a long time. Initially released in November of 2020, this conversation with Helen, industry-renowned hair and beauty consultant and co-founder of Richard Ward Hair and Metro Spa, explored her approach to KPI management, interpreting data, and assessing staff performance. Also, for those of you who remember Killian Vigna, co-host of the Forest FM podcast from his inception through May of 2021, you're in for a treat. Now, dubbed a salon business powerhouse and a beauty industry titan by industry trade magazines in the UK, Helen Ward is the co-founder of Richard Ward Hair and Metro Spa in London, the largest and highest grossing independent salon in the UK. At the salon, she's responsible for marketing, human resources, branding, and company development, a role that she relishes for its challenges and diversity. In expanding the Richard Ward brand, Helen now also helps oversee the company's manufacturing and product division at a global level, dealing with UK and overseas distributors and stockists and supplying the professional sector. A go-to business expert in the industry, Helen also works with exclusive salon brands and manufacturers, conducting seminars, hosting workshops and events, chairing forums and panels, and guest speaking both in the UK and internationally. That only paints part of the picture, though. Helen works with the government's personal care sector team at BEIS, Department of Business, Energy, and Industrial Strategy. She was the inaugural beauty ambassador for the NHBF, National Hair and Beauty Federation, and was appointed chair of the hairdressing arm of the government initiative Trailblazers from its inception in 2014 until 2018. She was also the first fully serving female chairman of the Fellowship for British Hairdressing, chairing the Finance, Council, and Events Committees from 2014 to 2016. Today, she is very much involved in campaigning type work with the Salon Employers Association, created by a group of salon owners, including herself and the Chapel Group's Toby Dicker, with the strapline Fairness and Parity for the Hair and Beauty Sector, and the key objective of campaigning on both ongoing and new issues which affect the sector financially. Before we take a trip down the memory lane of 2020, please note that this rerun has been lightly edited to reflect the segments that remain relevant to the conversation in 2024. Skipping ahead a segment addressing the COVID 2020 lockdowns, we revisit the conversation from this question onwards. How do you set, measure, and keep KPIs on track when you're facing constant change and financial challenges?
I think, to be honest, we've always tracked the same five KPIs, and they are just our Bible of KPIs. I mean, the thing is, if you try and track too much, sometimes you can't see the wood for the tree. So I think it's important for, you know, the staff to also, you know, to understand, particularly now, that they have a responsibility, not only to them, but to us, to ensure that they know and understand how to interpret the KPIs. And that, you know, just because things are up in the air does not mean that, you know, they don't have to assess how well their, you know, work is for them. They have to, you know, when your client numbers are down, I think even more reason to really get on top of the KPIs and make sure the team really understand them. Because each customer that is in their chair, you know, it's up to them to optimize every client that sits in their chair. Now we can't get customers into the chair. We can't drag them in by the hair and sit them down. I wish we could. But and they don't just fall out of the sky into the chair. So if you're teaching your team all the time consistently how to make the most of every client that they have, you almost make your life so much easier. I use the example of the time of my son when I talk about KPIs. You know, my son is 17 and, you know, a moody teenager. And, you know, he comes home from school and he barely said, you know, "Mommy, can you make me some breakfast now?" And I thought to myself, hold on a minute, this is crazy. I've got to teach him how to make his own breakfast. Otherwise, you know, unless he can do it for himself, it's always going to be down to me. And it's very much like that with the staff, you know, teaching them how to optimize what's booked in and to fill up their own white space will help them and help you. So, you know, more than ever since we've come back to work, I have focused on the KPIs and gone through them all with the team. So it's crucial. You know, we just because things are strange and odd and unsure and we can't, you know, we don't know when this is going to end, does not mean that, you know, life cannot keep on as it is on the shop floor. And it's something we've done. We've been in business 28 years. I've done it the whole time I've been in business and even before that. I do you know, it's funny. There's this chart that I have been using since I was a salon manager, very, very first of all, I did cut hair. I cut my mother's hair, not very well, but I did all my training and I went on the floor and I did clients. So I do understand what it's like to be on the floor. But somebody, it was my old boss, showed me this chart and it's a sort of flow chart. And I can't wait to actually share this when we sort of do some more things with you guys. But it starts with asking a very critical question, which is, could they do it, i.e. your staff, could they do what you're asking them to do if their life depended on it? And it takes you down to flowcharts. If the answer is no, then it's not knowledge and skill based. But if the answer is yes, it comes down to one word, and that's attitude.
Yeah.
So I always ask myself that. Am I asking them to do something? And then I ask myself, is it important? And then the next question is, yes, yes, of course it is. And then could they do it if their life depended on it, yes or no? And it really helps you to see the wood for the trees, because the whole point about KPIs is making sure that we make performance rewarding. And what we must make sure we don't do is make non-performance rewarding. And that's a key thing, i.e. if I perform, will I get more or will I get the same as if I don't perform at all? I've stunned you into silence.
Yeah, I'm trying to work that out in my brain. And it's like, for some reason, can you re-explain that?
Yeah, so is performance, i.e. what is performance rewarding?
Okay.
Yeah.
Do I gain if I perform? Do I gain something? What do I gain? It might be I earn more or whatever.
Yeah.
If you gain, then there's an incentive to perform. But if you set your staff up with a pay structure or something like that, where non-performance is equally as rewarding, then there's no incentive to perform.
Oh,
so it's actually the opposite.
So it's the opposite. So in other words, if you paid everyone a basic wage and everybody got the same, and there was stylist A who was fully booked all day long and worked through their lunch break and tried to fit in clients and, you know, and did everything that you're asking them to do. And stylist B, who did two clients and then marked themselves out for lunch and marked themselves out for a cup of tea and left at 5 when they were due to leave at 6 o'clock, but they got paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
Then stylist A would have no reason to perform, but stylist B, for stylist B, the non-performance would be equally rewarding.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's the question to ask yourself is, are you making with your team non-performance rewarding?
That's really interesting.
Because
yeah.
That is not something we can afford to do.
With that in mind, then, when we're thinking about KPIs, like, is it fair to say that KPIs actually give an accurate representation of your staff members? Like, just how much focus should we put on KPIs, or should we weigh that with, like, let's say they're not hitting their targets, but they're achieving elsewhere that's not technically on the KPIs? How do you balance that?
Right. And this is the difficult thing, I think, because sometimes, first of all, let's just go back to what KPIs mean, key performance indicators. So, you know, making sure, but the key to the success of how you gauge your KPIs is making sure that you track the same few things that they all understand, but you track them consistently. I don't keep changing them. So they almost grow up as they move through your team, understanding what those 5 things that you're going to assess their performance on are and how you track them, and then how you communicate the performance back to them. So I'm not a big believer in saying, oh, you know, here's a spreadsheet that tells you, you know, how many clients came from, you know, within 3 miles away and come on a Tuesday. I mean, we just need to track the same basic 5 KPIs. But if you look at any of the KPIs individually, they don't give you the true picture. So you need to look at all 5 and look at them as a whole sum of the parts. You know, you need to look at all of them, and the answers for the performance will be there somewhere. If you can interpret the information correctly, which is where it goes wrong, it's the interpretation of it, then the answers are all there for them and for you. And is it important? Yes, more so now, because people need to be in charge of their own success. I think even more, you know, our team are on a basic pay or a percentage of their net take, and they get whichever is the greater amount. So being in control, there's no cap on that pay. There's absolutely no cap. So, you know, all of my team worked really, really hard in the last 3 days because there's no wage cap. You know, they worked from 8 till 8. They fitted clients in everywhere they could because they wanted to maximize their pay because, you know, for the next month, things are going to, you know, things are going to be very tight for them. So I think it's making sure that you put the team in control of their own performance. And then it actually becomes not your responsibility, but you can then take the role of the mentor. How can I help you? Where can we improve? You know, how can I train you? How can I upskill you? So that your performance becomes much more in your control.
So, for example, you have two staff members and you're looking at, let's just put three sorts of things just to make it easier, right? So like number of clients in the week, the amount of time that they spent per client on average, and then say the, let's just say reviews, just because it's going to paint, a pretty good image. If, say, someone gets a ton of clients, like twice as more than Stylist B, spends a whole lot less time with each client, but in terms of reviews, they get maybe less and maybe a little like 4 stars instead of 5 stars, a little bit more than Stylist B. How do you interpret that? Like, how do you assess the performance? Does that make sense?
Well, it does completely. But the thing is, what doesn't make sense is the KPIs you picked.
Right.
So the key is finding the right KPIs to track. So I'll run through them very quickly, the ones that we have always tracked.
Okay.
One is the turnover of the member of staff. So the turnover, the amount of pounds they're putting in the till. Next is the retail sales. And I'll explain each one as a part of this whole piece. Mm-hmm. So turnover is one. Now that's going to be based on what they charge. So you've got to compare them against the peers that are in their same price tier, because obviously some of the staff charge more and some of the staff charge less. Retail should be pretty much 10% of what you're asking them to bring in on their price tier. So if you're going to say to someone, right, you are a stylist and we want you to take £1,000 a week, your retail should be 10% of that £1,000 on the top, so £100. And then there's three more KPIs that we track. One is the percent request. Now, this is a crucial KPI. This is what percentage of clients are rebooking that stylist by name. Not, oh, I don't mind who I see, but I particularly want to see Joey, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The next one is their occupancy rate. Because actually what we sell time. And that's what you help us to do, is to track our time. We sell time. We don't sell haircuts. We sell time. So what percentage of their day is full? And then lastly, it's their average customer spend, their average bill. Now, you could look at someone who is running at 100% request, and you could say, well, that's fabulous, you know. But how many people did they actually do? If they only did 10 clients in a week and they work 5 days a week, then they've only done 2 clients a day. So that request rate would then be false. Also, if a request rate, for example, is too high, what it tells me is there's no new clients that are asking for them. So that is not necessarily a good thing. Now, you could also say, right, someone's hitting Stylist B, hits their £1,000 a week, but their retail sales, they don't even come close. Now, that would tell me, well, if they don't sell anything, then are they conducting the right consultation? Because if they're not conducting the right pre and post consultation, the retail sales will be zero. So that would be a red flag for me. So do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
All these
yeah.
little red flags come up. Now, occupancy rate, if they're only, we want their occupancy rate to be 70%. So 70% of the time they're occupied, their chair is occupied doing clients. If their occupancy rate is particularly low, that shows me that there's no upsell, because they take the 2 clients the day that they've got booked in, they take what they've got booked in, i.e. that client was a cut and blow dry, and they haven't tried to upsell anything else to that customer. They just accepted what that customer has been booked for. and they haven't attempted to upsell. Because if you're tracking this every week, the picture very quickly builds up. And my red flag is if there's a decline in performance for more than 6 weeks, it's a red flag to me. So if you've got constantly very high percentage request but very low occupancy rate, it tells me they are dwindling, their customer base is dwindling, and there's no word of mouth new clients that are coming into them. So the experience must be poor. And then I would mystery shop. So they might be achieving their £1,000 a week, but if the rest of the KPIs aren't being hit, eventually the decline will come. So it's learning to interpret all five of those KPIs as a whole picture that is the key to success, but then teaching them to understand how you look and track at those crucial, crucial five KPIs. Because you want them to do it for themselves. You want them to just say, right. Yeah. And you want them to benchmark themselves against their peers. I mean, we have probably six different price tiers. So an apprentice stylist, it's no point them trying to track their performance against a style director who might charge four times more. They need to, you know, you need to compare a pear with a pear, not a pear with a banana. You know, it doesn't work otherwise. So we say just track against the people in your same price tier. And then when you start really outperforming the people in your price tier, we've got a reason to promote you. And if we promote you to the next price tier, you know, you will stay with us. Not only will you stay with us, but you get an instant pay rise because your what you can charge will increase, but also the percentage that we pay you will increase. And, you know, when I look at the team over 28 years, and most of them have been with us 10, 15, 20 years and work their way up through the ranks, all I can say is what we're doing works.
Yeah.
And I would not change it just because...
It's almost like gamifying it, yeah.
Absolutely, because the... Now, the customer behaviour has changed this year. That's what's changed. The customer behaviour has changed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, the customer behaviour changed. So we are yet to find out whether the customer behaviour will change back again. We don't know. We don't know how that's going to pan out. But... regardless, you know, it's never been more important to teach the team how to help be masters of their own destiny in terms of what they're earning, how they're performing, how they can work their way up through the price tiers, work their way through the ranks. And, you know, if you are one of our senior team, you are turning over, you know, some huge amounts, and you will be earning a direct percentage of those huge amounts, and that's why you stay. So the customer behavior, yeah, that's the key now. But I think it's so important to remind the team that, you know, how to optimize their day has never been more crucial.
Yeah. As part of management, so I took down notes of those five KPIs, and I'm thinking of specifically with the consumer behavior change of occupancy rate and average bill. So I'm thinking of just, for instance, my consumer behavior as a salon client, right?
Yeah.
I would have used to gone to the barbers every second week, had a steady average bill every time. Mm-hmm. I'm now spacing out my appointments, but also having a higher average bill. So in terms of management, when you look at those two specific ones, with today's context of that whole change in behavior,
yeah,
do you adjust the targets or how do you work that out?
That's a really interesting question. No, I don't adjust them. Back in the day when I was doing my training, you know, people came every 6 weeks, right? It was religious. That number hadn't changed in years. In 2008, when we had the crisis, people then, those stats actually turned themselves around and people were coming six times a year, which was every 8 weeks. Before COVID hit, The length of time between appointments was stretched even further. And it was actually on set to become every 11 and a half weeks. So in under 10 years, mm-hmm. we'd lost coming up to 4 appointments per customer per year. But what we did realise was that, yes, they were leaving it longer. And part of that on the hairdressing industry is the trend for longer hair and ombre and balayage and all that stuff. Because you don't, you know, you can get away with not, you know, my heart sinks for every young girl I meet that says, oh, yes, I haven't had it done for, you know, 9 months. And doesn't it still look great? But, you know, unfortunately, that is the trend. But I think even more, I mean, do you know what? We had an e-blast from a customer the other day, and she's a friend who's also a customer. She said, Helen, you're missing a trick. She said, you need to remind your customers that actually, she said, I sat with 4 of my girlfriends, and she said, we're all Richard Ward customers, and we all love your team and everything you do. She said, but we said, it's not just about our hair. It's not just about our skincare, our nails, our waxing, our facials. It is a place. It's the only place where we come in this awful and anxious world. We come in and it's as good for our mental health to be with you guys and somewhere where everybody knows us and makes us feel welcome as it is anything else. And that, for me, was really smacked me between the eyes, and I thought, actually, it's true. No, what we do is so fantastic. We have such a relationship with our clients. Mm-hmm. We need to maybe remind them that it's not just about great hair, and it's about feeling good about yourself. And maybe
you're the experts providing, making them feel good.
And somewhere where you feel great and you come out feeling restored. And so, I mean, yes, the customer behavior has changed, but if they're coming less often, what we want them to do is to experience everything it is that we have. My mantra in business has always been adapt or die. You know, you change with your customer isn't going to change for you.
So speaking of adapt and die, then, if we were to take it back to the staff targets, which...
Not adapt and die. We want adapt or die.
Yeah.
We don't want to adapt and then die.
But to take it back to the staff targets, and maybe not as extreme or as adapt or die. We will work you to the bone. If someone's not hitting those targets, what processes do you put in place to kind of nurture them? Because you said that your targets aren't 5 unique specific areas. They're actually set around being, giving you a holistic view. So if they're flagging, yes, or if one area, yes, is flagging, it means it's going to have a knock-on effect on other areas. So without, I suppose, pulling someone aside and going, you're lacking there, let's pick up the pace or get it sorted. Like, do you implement like a buddy system, or how do you teach them to kind of improve on that then?
Yes. First of all, the most important thing to teach them is that it's their responsibility to improve. End of. It's their responsibility to improve. We can hold their hand, we can mentor them, we can upskill them, we can retrain them, we can do virtual consultations, we can do role play. We'll do everything, all of the above, but it's their responsibility to talk to us and agree an action plan and work out, you know, where are the bits that we need to improve and how do we do it? And very often what's fantastic about having a team that's been with you for such a long time and trying to cultivate a team that have trained with you and come up through the ranks, the best thing about that is the elders want to train the new blood and the new flesh and take them under their wings. So we absolutely do that. And when someone first goes on the floor and starts doing clients, you know, we will make sure there is someone that they feel they're very comfortable with. But I mean, I have to say something else. One of the things about our brand is that we do not believe that for us, it doesn't work for any of our team to be a jack of all trades. Okay. They have to specialize in something. And naturally, their speciality will rise to the fore. Because when you've got 100 staff, what you can't have is 100 flavors of vanilla, right? You can't have 100 vanilla ice creams. You need to say, right, if you're concerned about hair loss or losing your hair through the menopause, we have an expert for you. If hair extensions is your concern, we have an extra expert for you. If coarse hair is something that you're concerned about, we have someone for you. If you want to try bright pink stripes in your hair, we have someone for you. If you want very fine, lights through your hair, we have someone for you. So all of our team on our team profile page on the website have to state what their specialities are. And then, I believe that, when you go to school, if you look back on your school days, you always like the thing that you're best at. For me, it was English. Terrible at maths, funny enough, but English. I mean, I could work out percentages. I could tell you what 20% off a pair of shoes is in a heartbeat. But
it's different when you put a currency symbol before it, isn't it?
Exactly. I remember my son when he was about 5, and I was trying to teach him math, and he's very, very sharp, my son, but not academic, yeah, I have to say, he said. And I was trying to teach him math, and when I just got my purse out and put some coins on the table, he said, "Mummy, why didn't you tell me maths is money?" I get it now. So I'm a bit like him when it comes to that. But I, if you're good at something, then you enjoy doing it. And if you enjoy doing it, you're good at it. So instead of trying to correct everybody's bad bits and make them perfect, I spent 20 years saying to every client when they phoned up, when they asked, who's your best stylist? I used to say, they're all good. Now I say, no, they're not all good. They're all good at different things. What is it you want?
It's a personalized journey, isn't it? It's creating a journey for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there was something you said earlier, and I noticed the one particular word. You said agree on an action plan. And I think that's really interesting that you used that particular word, because I think there's a huge difference between agreement and expectations. And while expecting someone to hit a target or getting good grades at school, for instance, and stuff like that, it might seem natural. But when you get a staff's buy-in or them to agree on an action plan, they're naturally going to feel it's more collaborative and motivating in general.
Absolutely. You're spot on. And, I have a trick for this. So when we agree an action plan, and we agree a really, I let them tell me what they think they could achieve. So I say, okay, you're currently, say, running at 50% request rate, and you know you should be running at 70%. Mm-hmm. So where would you like to see yourself in 3 months' time? And they'll say, I'd like to see myself at 80%. And I say, I'll tell you what, why don't we say that we'll agree then that you'll be at 65% in 2 months' time and 70% in 3 months' time. So I always go less than what they think they can do. Because once they tell you that they think they can do something, and if any of my team are listening to this, I'm busted now. But once they tell you that they think they can do something, then if you decrease what they think they can do, then the action plan is really, really fair. So I think that's a really key thing. And also to give them timeframes that are really achievable. It's pointless saying to someone, right, you're turning over £1,000, but you're supposed to be turning over £3,000. I'd like to be turning over £3,000 by this time next week. They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So I just think making it baby steps.
You want to keep it attainable.
So I've got this wonderful new quote, which I love, which is, forward is forward, whatever the speed. As long as you're moving in the right direction, forward is forward.
Yeah.
You might not be going quite as fast as you want to be, or you might not get to where you want to be as quickly as you want to, but forward is forward. So I think that's the key of showing them that, any bit of progress is good. And, you know, we'll hold your hand and we'll do everything we tell you to do. But you won't be surprised to understand or to learn. You know, I do give a bit of short shrift to people, but, you know, we're mentoring you. We've given you all the skills. We've put the client in your chair, you know, and now you haven't done anything that we've told you to do. Then that's not acceptable.
So Helen, then, just kind of coming near the end of the show, just how transparent are you
with... Oh God, I could go on forever. Should we carry on?
Well, we can always make this a 2-3-part, 4-part.
A series, yeah.
Just how transparent are you with not only your staff members' KPIs? So when you set KPIs with an individual staff member, do the rest of your team know each other's KPIs, but also then to take it back?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because we're very transparent.
Well, in that case, what about...
About the business, about our KPIs, you know, what we need to hit.
Well, yeah, that was my other part of it, is like, how transparent are you of your own KPIs? So do your team know what expectations you have of yourself and of your business?
Yes, absolutely. They know how much we need to take. They know how much the rent is. They know what percentage I'm after for my gross profit, what percentage I'm after for my net profit. They might not digest it or properly understand it, some of them, which I wouldn't expect them to. But yeah, we're very transparent. I mean, you know, a pound goes in the till, 20p goes out for VAT, so you've got 80p left. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky, you're making 10% of that 80p, so it's 8p left. You've then got to pay corporation tax on that 8p, which is 20%, so another 20% comes off. That's 1.6p gone, so that's 6.4p left. And then if you want to take that out as an owner of the business, you're going to then pay higher rate income tax on that dividend. So, you know, there's got to be an incentive for us. You know, we're in such uncertain times. As I said right from the beginning, the only thing that is certain is that nothing is certain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So we've just got to be adaptable. The way we think has got to be, you know, being able to scale up, scale down, go with customer trends, adapt or die. You know, we have to change the way we think. We cannot be set in a mindset where we are, where we're not prepared to change.
Yeah. Well, listen, Helen, this has been absolutely fantastic. Truly enjoyed that conversation personally. I'm sure Killian can attest to that too.
Absolutely. So much fun.
Yeah. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, because you do have some live education coaching consultancy, yes. You do some speaking and seminars as well. So where can people find you online and how can they reach out to you?
They can find me at www.helenward.com. HelenWard.com. That's an interesting thing about IP. You know, I have so many brands come to me and say, well, what should we call ourselves? It's like, just call yourself your name. People will find you. HelenWard.com, 2 L's. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys. Let's do it again.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Helen. Yeah, thank you.
Assessing staff performance is often a threatening process for both managers and employees. But when you put in place clear KPIs, agree on a plan of action, and put your staff in control of their performance, you provide an opportunity to discuss progress and make aligning employee and company goals much easier. The problem with data isn't the data itself, it's how you interpret it. While looking at figures alone to get an unbiased picture of an employee's performance might feel logical, it'll ultimately give you the wrong overview or assessment. Because numbers without context are just that, numbers. Helen's wealth of experience enables her to coach and mentor industry businesses from startups, small independent salons or premium salons to spas, franchises, small groups or large chains. She can quickly identify areas to focus on in order to maximize growth, increase profitability, and optimize productivity. From branding, marketing, and price positioning to reworking internal procedures and systems, Helen creates bespoke, tailor-made strategies to implement and achieve tangible results. If you'd like to discuss your business needs with her, she offers an initial complimentary 15-minute consultation call. Visit helenward.com for more information. And of course, Forrest can help you too. We have the staff performance and staff goals features to help you keep staff empowered and engaged. And in the summer of 2023, we added new layers to help hair and beauty owners see their business in a new light, whether they wanted to zoom in or look at the big picture at a glance. We know most of you didn't get into the hair and beauty industry for the number crunching and spreadsheets, which is why we designed the 5 latest Forest Reports dashboard to be as user-friendly as possible. You can read all about this on the Forest blog, and the link will be in the show notes. And well, thanks for listening. If you're looking for the links and resources mentioned throughout the episode, check out the show notes and or head over to forest.com/FM. Also, Forest FM is built on recommendations from the community. So if you or someone you know has a story from the salon floor worth sharing, please go ahead and DM me. You can find me on Instagram at a.belspring. Over the years of producing and hosting this podcast, many people have expressed a desire to get to know me better. I hope that with all of its imperfections, the fully rebooted Forest FM newsletter can help do just that and be something we can explore together while keeping the show about our wonderful guests. It goes out every Monday, and it's the number one place for any and all exclusive content and announcements. Now, finally, if you've enjoyed this episode, there are a few ways you can support the podcast and really make a difference. One, you can send the episode to a friend or share it on social media and tag us. Two, if you're listening to this on Spotify, leave a comment in the Q&A section of the episode. Three, you can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And four, well, your feedback is always appreciated. So if you've got any, send us an email at forestfm@forest.com.
Brought to you by Forest Salon Software. Forest FM episodes air weekly, sharing inspiring stories from the salon floor and amplifying community voices all over the globe. In your salon, we're at the heart of it. This episode was edited and mixed by AudioZ, Montreal's cutting-edge post-production studio for creative minds looking to have their vision professionally produced and mixed. Great music makes great moments.